Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. This episode is from the Momentum Series, resurfacing the most popular episodes from our archives to shine a light on the continued growth of companies in our network. And now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Super excited. With us today, we have Zach Posner, co-founder and managing director at the Legal Tech Fund. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So would love to hear, the name probably speaks for itself, but if we can just kick things off with a bit of background on the Legal Tech Fund's investment thesis, it would be a great start.
The name is intended to be self-explanatory. The Legal Tech Fund, we invest in companies that are transforming the world of law. The one thing I would say is most don't realize how big the world of law is and how everything that we do, I like to say from birth certificate to will, is governed by a legal doc. And if you think about all those interactions, you get to the areas that we cover. We think about investing into software and do three different buckets. The first one is what I just described to you, consumers. The second one is into corporates, where they have large general counsel offices. They also have business units that interact with legal. And then the third bucket is, of course, law firms, which is where most people immediately go. But that's how we think of the world. And then we also think that legal is in the center of everything we do, and it intersects with every other vertical you think about, every C-suite office. So we also think lots of our companies would identify as fintech companies or prop tech companies or HR tech companies. But when they're in or around the legal process, that's what we do.
Excellent. And so how did the journey begin? What led you to co-found the Legal Tech Fund?
The journey began a long time ago as a starting out in financial due diligence, then going to a pretty large venture fund, then found myself in the operating world, operating a couple companies. One of them particularly was helping law firms manage all of their vendors and making sure they were holding data in a secure way. And that kind of gave us an extraordinary amount of insight into what was happening in and around the world of law about 10, 15, north of 10 years ago now, and started to look at this vertical, started to do some angel investing. And as we realized there was nobody else in the globe thinking like this or being there as a solution for entrepreneurs in this vertical, we said, that can be us. So we planted the flag in late 20, early 21, and been off running pretty hard ever since.
Fantastic. All right. So let's talk a little bit about investing then. What's the fund's approach for identifying high potential startups?
Fund's approach. So we are very visible and we are out there pretty consistently. I'm hoping that we're trying to be out there wherever a prospective entrepreneur could be. And we're an early stage fund. So we think about companies from inception all the way to Series A. And I know that's a pretty big range, but it starts with a pre-seed round and then it continues to build. But for us, it's more important to be on top of this from a thematic perspective than it is to be at an exact stage. And so what we're doing is we cast a pretty wide net. We interact with lots of folks in and around this vertical. So being the first fund with this focus, it means that not only do we get calls from entrepreneurs, but we get calls from the end buyers of this technology. So law firms call us, general counsels call us, the larger companies that want to do biz dev partnerships call us and they say, hey, we're thinking about this type of space. What do you think about this? Or they also call us and say, we just came across this company. You guys should take a look at them. Or we now have our portfolio is now 63 companies. So there's lots of entrepreneurs that call us that say, hey, we just came across this company. You should talk to them. So for us, we've spread our tentacles throughout this entire industry in every nook and cranny. And when this is all that you do, you hear about things very quickly. And we're there as a resource for any one of the parties that I just mentioned to take that call. And so I think that was the question, but if I didn't answer it properly.
No, that's great. And it's brilliant approach as well. So on the themes of consumer, corporate, and law firms, any in particular that you're bullish on or the firm's bullish on at the moment?
Bullish on them all. They all have different dynamics to them. It's funny, usually I talk about them in reverse order, law firms, corporates, consumer, but I took you down a path, so I'll continue down a path. Look, consumers, at the end of the day, the numbers that I have in the back of my mind were the average attorney rate in this country is about $346 per hour. The median wage is $19 per hour. So what that means is nobody can afford access to this, to legal services in this country. And we think that technology can play a big role here over time. And we get really excited by that. And I think there's some stat that says a little bit north of 70% of Americans have an unmet legal need. Or even if you think about simple things like yourself, like every time you sign, if you're moving apartments and you sign a new lease, are you having an attorney review that? We get excited by this future or that says, what happens if when you're on Zillow, you can press one click of a button to get a lease reviewed? Or maybe even there's one of our portfolio companies is would do that automatically and said, hey, this is a fair lease. And it would score that for you right there. So that's how we think a consumer. Corporates, people don't realize that you have individual corporations that have thousands of attorneys, more attorneys than a lot of law firms do in this world. And they are just starting to think about technology. That legal suite is the last one that really has not been had any budget sensitivity over the years in a meaningful way. And you're starting to see that pressure get applied. So as that happens, they're bringing on new roles that are effectively internal operating officers to think about how you can put technology to make workflows improve and things along those lines. And then law firms, we're in the middle of what I would say is an AI large language model revolution. And the number one vertical that Goldman said is going to be affected by all of this stuff is going to be legal. So we think that right now the law firm model says you have one partner, you have five associates. And we think that pyramid or that leverage model may get squeezed a little bit and you may see roles and responsibilities changing. So each one has its own dynamics, but you put these things together and you're north of $1 trillion a year. These are very big markets. So, lots of opportunity.
That question. So as technology comes to disrupt this space, curious, is it just the way the cards fell that legal was one of the last ones to face?
Repeat one more time. I didn't hear you.
Sure. So is it just the way the cards fell that legal was one of the last verticals or spaces to see disruption with technology, or are there any other unique headwinds at play?
I've never thought about why. I can tell you the ones that fell the quickest were the ones that are in or around generating revenue. So if you think about the first type of technology that I think about in a meaningful way, it's probably like CRM technology and sales technology designed to help accelerate sales. I would say that was the first wave when I think of Salesforce and those types of things. Then I think a lot about marketing and marketing automation and things along those lines. Somewhere after that, I would say you had a lot of fintech. Somewhere after that, more recently, we're seeing a lot of HR and learning. I can tell you that the work that attorneys do is extraordinarily complex. There's a higher level of professionalism in this country. It requires additional education. It requires additional certification. With that comes more of people are more embedded in their habits, and there's bureaucracy, there's policies in place, there's legal barriers in place for some of this stuff.
Sure.
These are some of the reasons that maybe it took a little bit longer.
Well, it makes sense if you think about the complexity associated with the unique nuances in any given legal scenario. And obviously not an expert, but I can't help but think about parallels for accounting. Accounting is structured. It lends itself to automation, yet there's so much nuance involved that there's a challenge to remove humans from the
loop. You don't want to get things with accounting wrong. You don't want to get things with legal wrong. So maybe it's a little, if you show the wrong advertisement to the wrong person and the average person sees 500 ads a day on the internet, like the world's going to not, it's going to keep going.
Different concept.
But you don't want to be wrong on a number in a financial statement if you're talking about accounting.
Yep. Makes great sense. So with that, so obviously tech, big focus. Let's talk about the founding team. How does the Legal Tech Fund think about founders?
Yeah. You're saying investments that we evaluate?
Yes.
Look, the earlier stage you are, the more we think about founders. The later stage you are, the more you think about a company. And the thing that I always think about is any member of the management team at Coca-Cola decided to step away tomorrow, I would make a bet that you'd still be able to buy a Coke in the local convenience store. And that's one end of the spectrum. And so there you have something that's, hey, it's the bet is on the company and processes. At our stage, there really is no company. It's all about the people. And it's like this line, and we're down here where the people are everything. But from an evaluation perspective, the types of things that we think about is we think about a founder market fit construct. And that's more than just saying, hey, it was somebody an attorney, therefore it's okay, they understand this. It's more, no, they were an attorney with this exact pain point. They delivered thousands of times. They understand this better than anybody in the world. They're uniquely qualified to be doing this if somebody's going to do it. We think a lot about business acumen. We think a lot about technology acumen. We think a lot about, think internally, hey, are they coachable? And it doesn't mean by us necessarily, but it means, but chances say somebody has been through a similar experience to what they're about to go through. And you and me know, like, you can learn by banging your head against the wall, or you can follow a Sherpa in some capacity. So those are some of the characteristics that we look for. But I would say that for us, understanding the founders is absolutely critical. And it's something that we've even, I remember the first year we got started in November of 20. So my guess is this is December of 21. So a little bit after a year, it was downtime for the holidays. And we said, let's look back and talk about the investments we've made so far. And let's just take a little time out while things are quiet. And we started talking about each one, and we weren't even talking. The first thing we were talking about was the experiences with the entrepreneur. We weren't talking about the company or what they did, or it was almost like, how have we seen these entrepreneurs grow? How have we seen, what are we seeing positive about them? Where are we seeing that they've struggled? And it's just interesting that that's how everything was framed. It wasn't in the context of the company. It was in the context of the entrepreneurs and the founding teams. So that actually had us effectively double down on how we think about founders going into 22 and beyond.
So I'm curious. So you conduct this assessment, and now you're up to 63 portfolio companies that you're working with. Zero obligation to name a company or a team, but would love to hear if there's any stories in particular that you really impress you either around growth or overcoming challenges.
Yeah, we see it a lot, and we see it every day. And this is what's interesting. It's all different. It's not even like you can consistently bucket these things and the strengths and the weaknesses and the ability to recognize some of these things. So I think that there's like just any example you can possibly imagine from founders saying, Zach, I was a practicing attorney. I had no idea what that construct you were talking to me meant. If you want us to think like this, just tell us how to think about this thing. To the fact that founders come at us and say, no, that's not how we look at the numbers. We look like this. And we're like, wow. So I would say this is like a bidirectional relationship where we find ourselves learning every day from these founders as well. But no, every single entrepreneur, we have different stories where we've learned and where we've suggested some concepts, maybe taught them or maybe not.
And makes good sense. I have not yet seen in my own experience a one size fits all opportunity to provide counsel or guidance, but great segue. Would love to think or love to hear about how the legal tech fund thinks about engaging your portfolio companies, generally hands off or more involved.
It's a mix. And it's not a mix by design. It's a mix by what the entrepreneur needs and when they need it and what they want and what they don't want. We have examples where we're on the phone with entrepreneurs every day and then some. And we have examples where we don't talk to an entrepreneur for a month and a half or 2 months. And by the way, this also changes over time. It's not necessarily specific to a company. And I think that lots of what we try to do, though, is say, what are the different areas that venture funds can help? And if it's not uniquely situated to legal, we probably try to say, hey, feel free to go to your other funds for that type of stuff. So the stuff that we want to be brought into is when companies have questions around product, when companies have questions about pricing, when companies have questions about their end customers, when companies want to meet their end customers, when companies want biz dev relationships within the industry. And I'll compare and contrast all of that to what a traditional fund does, which says, hey, we're going to help you hire. Hey, we're going to help you raise your next round of capital. And yes, we can do all of that stuff. We do all of that stuff at times. But if we're working with other funds, we're saying, hey, go work with them on that stuff. For you, like, we're uniquely situated to help you. And we are hosting 5 dinners in the next couple of weeks with your prospective customers. Like, why don't you come with us and tell your story a little bit? And that's like something that we can do that no other venture fund in the world can do. So that's how we try to think about things, is saying, what are we like uniquely able to help our entrepreneurs with that nobody else can? And we're trying to double down on all of that. And in fact, that even there's things that we do. We're sitting here in October, in early December, we have a pretty big summit. And this, it's called the TLTF Summit. It brings together all of the leading entrepreneurs, ours and everybody else in the industry. It, from an early stage, it brings together the biggest CEOs in this vertical. It brings together every investor from small funds like us all the way to the largest private equity funds in the world that join us. And the end customers, we have most of the top law firms that will be joining us. Same thing with general counsels, all of the investment bankers. And we bring everybody together. But that's like unique to this vertical and to us.
Yeah.
That's the type of opportunities that we want to surface for folks.
And while we're on the subject, for any of our listeners who'd like to attend the summit, where can they find out more information?
They can find out more information at tltfsummit.com. Although we don't put that much out intentionally. It's designed to be a very high-end event that where each one of the applicants is extraordinarily, goes through a screening process. And the theory is anybody you sit down next to is supposed to be able to help you in some capacity. So that's where you can learn more. I would say if they'd like to attend, we're in a little bit of a bind because we're about 5 days ago, we had to pull the plug on this thing and shut it down for this year because we went beyond capacity. And thank you. And it's really an honor an honor to be associated with putting this together, but it's really a testament to everybody that joins us and what the word of mouth has been the last couple of years. So there's a great team that works on all that stuff. But I would say, I'm pretty sure there's something where you can sign up to be informed about next year's event, and which will likely be in December again.
Great. And I can't help but feel, I mean, to your point, it sounds from a legal perspective, portfolio companies who have a legal tech fund on the cap table at a significant advantage, but also your limited partners. And I have to imagine that knowing that you guys are as close to the industry as you are is just a tremendous advantage.
Yeah. And look, that's all we're trying to do is create unfair advantages for our portfolio companies. If you're the next social network, unfortunately, we can't help you. There's days where I would love to, but it's just not something that we can be helpful with. But so I'd venture to say we're eligible to invest in directionally 5% of the companies in the world. That's our universe. But for those 5%, we want to be the best investor in the world, period.
Love it. Great segue, raising financing. Would love to hear what advice you have to either first-time founders looking to raise outside equity or an existing founder who's preparing for a Series A.
We're talking early stage, and I would say laser-sharp focus on whatever it is you're trying to solve. We see so many companies that get distracted, and the products end up becoming bigger and bigger. And what happens is you have customers that they all sign up for different reasons, assuming things are going well, or at least appear to be going well. But when you unpack it, that means that nobody cares enough about one specific pain point. And we believe that if you want to build a great business, you got to get it into a rinse and repeat cycle. And when you're trying to be 5 things to 5 different people, you're going to end up with not 20% of what your capability could have been had you focused on one thing. And the fact that people are asking you for other things probably indicates that your pain point's not big enough.
Mm.
And we would prefer to see you go all in on one thing, find out that you're wrong, and then go to the next thing. One of our MI advisors, he had a philosophy of fail fast and fix it. But what happens is when you try to do too much, you don't feel fat. You fail super slow and you don't have the opportunity to fix it. And we expect people to be wrong on whatever they're doing. And the question is just, can you react quick enough to pivot re-instrument, whatever it is, move to the left, move to the right, and take a second shot at it. Because what I think is people come to us with ideas, and ideas sound great, and we're like, look, directionally, there's something here. I don't know what it is. We're not going to know until you give it a go. So go give it a go, and let's just keep our ear to the ground and listen to customers and figure it out. And if we hit, that's awesome. If we miss, let's adjust. I think we have Mike Maples is another venture capitalist with a group called Floodgate in out west, and he just put out a book. And the purpose of the book was his biggest wins were all pivots. And he tells the story, I believe, of I think it was Odeo. That was a podcasting platform that pivoted to Twitter. He tells the story of Justin TV that pivoted to Twitch. He tells the story. And all of these things had like similar or like directionally, it was where the entrepreneur was pointing. But they were like Justin TV was broadcasting live TV of himself and realized that, hey, there's a whole gamer universe, or I'm sure there was multiple steps between those two points, and people want to broadcast their gaming activities. Let's build a platform for that. You don't get that. What happens is if you don't have that laser sharp focus, you don't get that feedback loop, and you don't know if what you're doing is working or not, because you can get distracted by a lot of different things.
Yeah, I've often credited Warren Buffett, and I don't know if he really said it, but saying something to exact effect, I can only optimize one variable at a time. And this idea of being myopic, and also in my experience, is just extremely valuable, because you speed up the learning process, you figure things out more quickly. And then this time really is money.
And look, everything I tell you, it's like I've made a lot of these mistakes myself when I was operating, and you just see it. So we're just, and it's, people don't want to know, they don't want to be told they're wrong. They don't want to learn that they're wrong. But the real secret is, no, you want that feedback as quickly as humanly possible.
That's right. Looking ahead, sometimes I realize people don't appreciate the role that venture capitalists provide in terms of liquidity for what's arguably a really important part of the US economy, notwithstanding the rest of the world. That said, would love your perspective on how you see the venture capital landscape either remaining the same or changing over the coming years.
So from our end, part of the reason that we're really happy doing what we're doing is we think capital has almost turned into a commodity.
Hmm.
You know, so we see lots of capital out there, lots of generalist funds, and basically, yeah, capital's become a commodity. And that's why we're big believers in what we're doing on this like thematic focused fund, where you need to be able to demonstrate value way beyond capital. So for us, when we think about making an investment in the company, it's not just a financial capital decision. It's like a human capital decision. That's just as important to us. And it should be just as important to our entrepreneurs that want to do business with us. As you're not only taking our financial capital, you're taking our human capital. And that's the more, so from our end, we think at the earlier stage, the more thematic a fund is, the more the fund can actually help to drive positive impact for the companies. So like we're hopefully part of that wave in the middle of it, but I think that's a big wave that's coming. And I think that as you go upstream, there's just a lot of capital that's available right now for companies. And I'm really happy playing in the space that we're playing in and the stage that we're playing in.
I recently read that. So a similar assessment, the bigger challenge is finding opportunities for the capital that's out there. And if you think of the spectrum, I'd argue that funds like the Legal Tech Fund are ideally suited to find them, because you're closest to the ideas that are being generated and put to work.
And look, I think that the more dollars you have, you see some of these massive funds, which we're proud not to be, that they're forced to like artificially deploy certain amounts of capital. And we don't have that. There's also challenges when you have a smaller fund, but in general, like that's the type of stuff we're not thinking about. And that, yeah.
Zach, it's been an awesome podcast. I would love to spend even more time with you. Before we wrap up, last question, what advice would you give to any aspiring VCs out there?
Any aspiring VCs have a unique differentiated story and approach. because I think that the venture capital market's become like inundated with capital in the last couple of years. And you want to find a unique reason why people want to work with you, or how you can help your companies, or how you look at the world a little bit differently. So that'd be that's what we think about every day, is how can we be the best and how can we help our entrepreneurs? And if we do all that stuff, good things will happen.
Great stuff. Zach, how can people find you?
LinkedIn. I'm on there way too much. I actually think it was Microsoft's best acquisition ever. It's one of those platforms that I don't know when I jumped on it, 2006, 5, 4 or something, but whenever it came out, but I found myself on there more and more every day.
Zach, thank you again. Really appreciate your time. I know our audience is just going to find this an extremely valuable podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. And with that's another episode of the Innovators Investors Podcast. Thank you. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.